There's two points I'd like to make. The first is, I remember being told 20 years ago that CCTV was going to be the saviour of us. And it proved good because it's able to show me really difficult pictures of people before they blow themselves up on trains and buses, which I thought was really helpful. And I think that's one thing we mustn't forget. But the most important thing for me is, and I'd like to take a dialogue with you on this, certainly, is why do we have to fingerprint our children at schools to buy a library box? Or to when they go to the mail? Thank you.
Was an infringement of liberty at the time, but you can't. Surely, today, where would you be safe to walk if you didn't have CCTV? You know, I can quote police around Sweden, had CCTV being installed. So that's quite a good point. That's a point, not a question, though. But I will get some juice in a moment. Certainly the next important question.
Thank you. Short delivery for council. A couple of hopefully new points. Firstly, I have a pocket full of ID, most of which I choose to have, and I pay for ones that I want, like a passport and a driving licence. And I know I'm taking a risk because it's all on computer, or I'm taking a risk with it every day. I have to live with that in the modern age. However, I don't choose. I'm not a criminal, so as far as I'm concerned, my fingerprints, my iris, what it is, and my DNA are mine until such time as I become a criminal. And I see no reason why anybody else should have it on any database whatsoever. If the government wants to come up with a proposal that we have to carry around some form of ID, photographic ID, proof of address on us all the time, I could almost live with that because it's in my pocket already and it wouldn't cost me any money. It comes back to the whole point that this is a total overreaction. It's not going to do anything new, really, other than give more state control potentially in the future.
Thank you. Thanks, David Sands. There's two additional facets to the cost pressures, which I think the policies that Michael mentioned earlier on in the evening, unfortunately, he's not here to perhaps refute them if indeed that's possible. The first is about the fraud. Michael talked about the stopping fraud. The simple truth is, the reason why a passport is worth so much money to thieves so they can copy it, the fact that a credit card or a debit card is worth so much in that it can be copied and therefore this fraud and this identity theft is because those things exist. If we didn't have a passport, if we didn't have a debit card, that fraud would never exist and crime would exist. Now clearly those things need to exist in a modern age, but the fact is, the second you actually introduce an identity card, you then have actually an additional source of revenue for people who are trying to create false identities and trying to steal IDs. You're not taking away from them, you're fueling it. And the second point Michael said was there's a real fallacy in that he said, well, for example, your employer can have access to your data unless you say, yeah, you can have a look, here's my permission. And so the fallacy there, and I think this happened to me with the new job I got not long ago. It was only open to me if I had satisfactory references. How long does it take for a new employer to say, yes, you've got the job? As long as I get to have a look at everything you have on the National Register, and all the reasons, how long does it take for a life assurance company to say, sure, you can have life assurance in a second, but I get to have a look at what's on your ID? Both of those things become additional cost pressures. Firstly, because you're going to have to counter the ID theft, and secondly, because this ID database will soon become something that's checked on a regular basis by almost every employer and every life insurance company. And that's just a tip of the iceberg.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Gentlemen.
Thank you, Councillor Lister. Practical question I would like to ask you. How is this going to protect the public against the terrorists? Many of them are quite content to blow themselves up, so it'd be happy to do it for their riches. But apart from that, what actual protection does it have you to know the names, 1 in 60 million, that might be around to do you harm? Well, in practical terms, I suggest that it's an absolute waste of time and money.
Okay, well then let's explore, you know, if we're using the ID card as a tool to fight terrorism, and you take the ID card away, then what do you use, it, you know, for forward thinking 10 years, 20 years time, when we need some machinery to tackle terrorism and the way it's always going to increase and the threats going to get ever greater? Robert, you know, give us a proposition, right, that is an alternative to the idea of the fight terrorists.
Well, yeah, you've got to look at the facts and the case studies of existing terrorist outrages. And Owen's point is an important one. You know, most terrorists don't give a damn about their identification being revealed. Steve made the point about co-serving television cameras, and if they were shy of their ID, why are they, you know, in so many cases easily recognisable? Now, come back and make no apology for repeating the point about July 7th. You know, how would that have been stopped by the use of an identification card, Steve? It just wouldn't have had any effect whatsoever. So you need to ask yourself then, looking at the cases that we know about, but what is the problem here? The problems are more fundamental, they're geopolitical, they're related to world affairs, they're related to our domestic problems. We do have a problem in this country, a growing problem with some, a very small section of society that takes a radically different view to the sort of society we want and will stop at nothing, including suicide bombing, to achieve that, and we deal with it via the police and the intelligence services. That's what you spend your money on. MI5 and MI6, anticipating the problems, confronting them head on, and dealing with them in that way. Technology isn't going to solve terrorism, period.
Well, Stella, you have seen the atrocities with the IRA, particularly the time as a cinema. What sort of debate is there to counter terrorism at that time? Other than gathering information and knowledge about who would be perpetrators?
Well, we certainly didn't propose, Jim Callaghan and other Labour leaders didn't propose identity cards and international database. They dealt with it by traditional means. That is by surveillance, by infiltration, by sufficient police, and sufficient army people. The number of reinforcements we sent to Northern Ireland during my period as MP for Swindon were enormous. So that in actual fact, we flooded Northern Ireland with soldiers, we increased the number of police, we gave them the tools to do the job, we infiltrated the IRA cells, and we put extra protection into cities in this country, particularly London. And they were highly successful, all without a database. And the fact is that the police, in particular, are not able to do their job because they are bound by bureaucratic tape. Every day we hear about field policemen on the beat, field police stations to which people can report, and when you do report them, they are bound by red tape. And let me just tell you a recent experience which I had. There was a power stone in Redding, and the police had located the car. And the occupants had got out, they had been chased, and there was a helicopter above. And the man ran into my porch. Quite a frightening experience. But anyway, the helicopter lost him, and he dumped his coat and cleared off. So we phoned the police. As good citizens, we phoned the police, and they were good, they came up. One of the police on, and then there were two police, one man and one as a woman, two police, and they wanted a witness statement from me. And an hour later, I was still getting the witness statement, and those two policemen were stuck in my house instead of chasing the terrorists. But they had to do it. That's part of their job.
And we really must release the police to get back on the streets and catch the criminals and deter the terrorists. That is the only way we can do it. We might even have to allow telephone tap evidence in court. That is something which is a reasonable consideration. So there are all those are the only measures that can do it. Not even the 4.5 million CCTV cameras we've got will do it. You need the people on the ground. And unless you get them there, and unless you release them to do the job that they're supposed to do, you won't stop the terrorists and you won't catch the criminals. That's the simple answer to that. Now, could I also make a point, make reference to the lady there who talked about the 1930s? Well, of course, I knew the 1930s as well. And if Hitler had had this database, he could have murdered 13 million people. And we must always remember that. And I do urge people, and you know, I've been around politics for a very long time. I was first elected as a councillor when I was 27. That's a long time ago. I've been a leader of the council, I've been a member of parliament, I've been in the government. I've been a government whip. So I know how the government works. And you've always got to be frightened of government. Don't you make any mistake about that? Governments can be very dangerous people. And always remember that our system is based on the fact that the state is there to serve the people and not the people to serve. Creatures of God or something else, but never consider yourself the creatures of the state. And I do urge you always to keep that in mind when they want to know more about you.